So last time we were speaking about how David HaMelech had a nisayon, he had a challenge from Hashem. Hashem told him exactly which area it's going to be. It's going to be in the area of Arias. And right after this conversation, this whole story with Bathsheba took place, where David saw Bathsheba. He called for her, and he was intimate with her while she was married to Uriah Hittite. Now, we said how Uriah really gave her a get before he went out to war. Either it's regular get or it's a get al tnai. In any case, according to the opinion that it was a get al tnai, then she would only be divorced from before the war started, if Uriah was actually killed at war. Then the get will be in effect.
From before.
Yeah, from before. So we spoke about how the Mari has five different complaints against David HaMelech. He has five different problems with what he did. And the Malbim deals with each one of them. He addresses each one and he explains how none of them are really the fault of David. David is not held accountable for any of them. So let's go over it quickly. The first problem is the chait of Eshes Ish, the fact that he was intimate with a married woman. And that we already dealt with because he gave her a get. The second problem is that he wanted Uriah to go home and be with his wife after he came back from war. He was not careful about having that 3-month period to make sure that we know exactly who the father is. That's why when a woman gets divorced, she has to wait 3 months before she remarries, so we know who the father is, clearly. Back then, they did not have DNA testing.
Well, how about he wanted him to go there in case she did get pregnant, it wouldn't be from him.
Well, he already knew she was pregnant. She already was pregnant when Uriah came back from war. So he knew that, David HaMelech knew that he was a father.
Oh, no, he knew that, but he wanted to make that everybody should think that the baby
Uriah was a father, yes.
Versus a father.
I mean, that's going to cause a serious complication.
That's not so right either.
I mean, right. So the Malbim. So the Malbim deals with that, and he says that David HaMelech planned to keep it as a secret until this child would grow up. Once he grew up, he would tell him his true identity, reveal to him that he's really the son of David HaMelech, and that he should not. So we'll know who to marry and who not to marry, because you don't want anyone to marry their sister, their sibling. That was the second issue the Mari had. The third issue the Mari had with David HaMelech was that he placed Uriah on the front line, planning to kill him in the heat of battle. According to the Mari, this was done wrongly because Uriah was not supposed to be killed. But the Malbim already explained that Uriah was a Morid B'Malchus. He rebelled against David HaMelech. 3 points. First of all, he refused to listen to David when David told him to go back home and be intimate with his wife. He did not listen to David. Secondly, he addressed Yoav as his master in front of David. The rule is, when you speak to a king, you are not allowed to address anybody else as your master. It's always Adoni HaMelech. You don't say Adoni Yoav when you're speaking to a king. That was another aspect of the Merit B'Malchus of Uriah. And that's why he was held accountable, and he was supposed to be punished by death. So, when David placed him in the front lines, there was nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong, and he was allowed to do that because Uriah was a Merid B'Malchus. Now, why did he have to do this in such a...
Why not just execute him?
Execute him, exactly. Because it's going to look really bad. Mm. First, you go out and execute the husband. Next thing you do is take his wife, right? Doesn't exactly look so good, right?
It happens all the time.
Yeah, but when the king does it, you know, when the president of the United States does it, it's one thing. But when the king does it, it's something entirely different.
It's at the point that he's supposed to be a righteous king.
Right.
I mean, if it was another king, nobody would blink an eye.
Right, but David HaMelech is David HaMelech, and people would... the story still came out. To some degree, the Gemara talks about, the Gemara in Sanhedrin Perek Chelek talks about how when David HaMelech would give a shear, he would be in the middle of giving a shir, whatever topic it was, and someone would raise his hand and say, David HaMelech, I have a question. What is the halacha if someone is intimate with a married woman? What is the halacha? Well, what do you do with that man? So what would David HaMelech answer? He would say, you know what the halacha is? The halacha is that he's punished by death, right? Eshesh Zinsa is punished by death, her and the Baal, the man who's with her. However, someone who embarrasses, he's punished by death. However, he does have a chelik l'olam haba. He does have a part in the world to come. But someone who embarrasses someone in public, ain li chelik l'olam haba. He does not have a part in the world to come. So we see from that Gemara that, to some degree, the story did come out. And people did know about it. We also find that people looked at David in a very negative light. Up until the time of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. When Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, it says that everything was all ready. Like Gemara talks about it, everything was all ready. He wanted to go into the Beis HaMikdash, however, the gates would not open. They would not open. He was not allowed to enter. And Shlomo HaMelech started davening, and only once he mentioned David HaMelech, his father, that's when the gates opened. And from that instant, people knew that David HaMelech is not held accountable for the story of Bathsheba. Until then, he was held accountable in the eyes of the people. But from then on, he was not held responsible. So we see that, to some extent, the story did come out. People did view David in a negative light. But through these episodes with the Beis HaMikdash...
You read the Inquirer, all this stuff. You know what the Inquirer is? You know, there's a new lesson from a paper.
Right.
People, I mean, you know, it's something you can have if you don't know really what's going on. It doesn't look right. I mean,
right.
It still doesn't look right. It
really doesn't look right. Yeah, I'm saying it's clear that David HaMelech did not pass the Nisayon. That's clear. It's interesting because on one hand, the Gemara says that Bathsheba was roi to David HaMelech, Misheshes and Mebereshis. She was destined to be with him, destined to be married to him from the beginning of the creation of the world. However, Ela She'achla Paga, meaning he ate her unripe, meaning he kind of preempted what was supposed to happen anyway. He made it happen sooner than the right schedule. So, we see that on some level they were destined to be together. They were supposed to be together, but the way it happened was not did not happen correctly. Did not happen the right way. And from the fact that Bathsheba's son, that was conceived through this whole story, he was really supposed to be the next king. Mm-hmm. However, he died as a baby, as we're going to see later on. So clearly, that was part of the chet of David. David was punished very severely for this avera. It says that four of his sons ended up dying because of this episode. The four sons were this baby, this son of his that died as a baby.
Avshalom.
Avshalom was one of his sons. Amnon, who was his oldest son, and the fourth son was Adoniah. So four of David HaMelech's sons ended up dying. We're gonna actually get to there.
Don't we say
that was his punishment? That
the children don't get punished for the father's sins unless they sin too.
Right. Well, we see clearly that Amnon definitely sinned. The whole story with Tamar. We're gonna get to that. Avshalom clearly sinned. No. Right? He was rebelling against his father. It says that Avshalom actually went ahead. And when David HaMelech escaped, he was on the run. Avshalom came into the palace, and he was intimate with 12 of the Pilakshim, the concubines of David HaMelech.
One was No.
He, I guess, apparently not. But, so Avshalom was not exactly the most righteous man. Adonijah also tried to reclaim the kingship by force, which did not end well for him. So, That was one punishment that happened to David. Another punishment that David suffered was he had tzaras for 6 months. It says for 6 months, Parshu Mimena of Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin separated from him. David was the head of the Sanhedrin. He was a part of the Sanhedrin. And after this whole story, they separated from him for 6 months. He had leprosy, he had tzaras. And obviously, he suffered physically very much.
How old was he at this point?
How old was he? I'm not sure exactly. I don't know.
He wasn't 70 yet.
No, he wasn't 70
yet.
He died at 70.
He died at 70, but I mean, was it close to the, for his time to go, or was it way before?
No, it was way before, because I'm saying we see that later on that Shlomo, who was the son that came, from Bathsheba, was old enough later on.
Yeah. Isn't Sarash usually something that someone gets for Lashon Hara?
Yeah, yeah. Usually, so the person gets.
What was David's lashon hara?
So no, this case, you're right. It wasn't lashon hara. Typically, you're right. The Gemara says that tzaras is a punishment for lashon hara, mm-hmm. But in this case, it wasn't. We see different people that got tzaras.
Different levels of tzaras.
Yeah, also. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What kind of law was in that time? If somebody not keen, but somebody else rape another wife. This is what kind of punishment should be.
This, yeah, he's punished by death. Yeah.
He should be killed?
Yeah, he should be killed.
But king make some exclusion from his rule?
No.
He should be killed by law?
Well, technically he was not intimate with a married woman because she got a divorce.
Yeah, she had the gap.
She was divorced. Again, it's a dispute in the Gemara if she was divorced, if she was just a regular divorce. Before Uriah went out to war, he gave her a regular, straightforward divorce. Or there's another possibility that's mentioned in the Gemara, another opinion, that he divorced her on condition that he dies at war, then she will be divorced from before her husband went out to war.
But he forced her to intimate relation, or she was happy with that?
Well,
because this is exactly said, she asked to take her to him. It means she right. forced her, and this was
doesn't mention anywhere that it was done against her will. Doesn't mention that. I haven't seen that in any of the commentaries or in the Gemara anywhere.
But this is, he asked somebody to take her. Which means by
right,
force.
He says he sent for her.
Yeah, but you say that, but at this point, he was alive, and he still had, you know, relations with her.
Right.
You don't know if he's going to die or not.
You're right.
David knew he did wrong because he says right when nothing comes to
right,
him,
I sin right away. We're gonna get there. Uh-huh. Yeah, what were you gonna say?
I was gonna say, is the question here that he took the wife or the fact that he sent Uriah to war to be killed?
Well, according to the Malbim, he had a full right to send Uriah to be killed
because
Uriah was
him.
Yeah, because Uriah was a Mered Bamachos. He was a rebel against the king. By not listening to the king, and by addressing Yoav as his master in front of David HaMelech, that deems Uriah as a rebel. And that's punished by death.
I understand.
So he had full right to kill him.
It seems like he could have done that in the first place, but now it seems like he has a different excuse to send him to war to take his wife. So
what do, mean if,
like his,
what do you mean he could have done that in the first place?
As soon as Uriah, he waited afterwards. Like, after Uriah dissipated him, no?
No, no,
no.
Right away, he sent him to war. And he sent a message with Uriah, ironically. He sent a message with Uriah to the general, Yoav, to place Uriah on the front line, to assure the fact that he's going to be killed.
Exactly. So it seems like he was placing him exactly on the front line because of he saw Bathsheba through the window.
No, that was only after Uriah rebelled.
So he saw Bathsheba after Uriah.
First he was intimate with Bathsheba.
Yeah.
So again, the way it happened was, first he was intimate with Bathsheba. Now his initial plan was very shady, let's call it.
Yeah.
His initial plan was to have Uriah come home. And again, once he found out that Bathsheba became pregnant, he was in trouble.
Okay.
how does a woman become pregnant when her husband is out at war? Right? For sure, definitely, the story would come out that she was with a king. And that would not look good for David. So the plan A was to bring Uriah home, have Uriah be intimate with his wife, then everyone would assume that she was pregnant from Uriah. According to that plan, David was willing to take upon himself the avera of being with a married woman. And that was clearly wrong.
I apologize for being confused, because I'm a little bit tired, because I'm trying to put work in my own head. But then wouldn't Uriah have the right to basically rebel against the king, even though it was the king?
You know, first of all, you never have a right to rebel against the king. No matter what the king does, you're not allowed to rebel against him.
What they say, all is fear and love and war.
Yeah.
That's not what they're talking about.
You're talking about regular people. We're talking about tzaddikim here.
Yeah.
Right. Again, it's very hard to understand. There's, you know, a lot of the Gemara clearly says that Kol Oimer David HaMelech Chata Einoi Ela Toyeh. Anyone who says that David HaMelech sinned is 100% wrong. David HaMelech did not sin.
Yehuda,
that's what the Gemara
Yehuda
says.
Yehuda and
we're going to get to that. We're going to talk about that as well.
There's more than one.
Yeah. There's more than one.
All right.
Yeah.
Woman has a get. He's allowed to former. She's still allowed for the former husband.
Sorry?
Practically speaking, if she receives her forget,
no, so let's go over
to sleep this kiss.
So you're right. Let's go over the sequence of events. Right? So plan A was to have Uriah come home, be intimate with his wife, then everyone would assume that she was pregnant from her husband, Uriah. Right? Now, according to this plan, the get that he gave her would be annulled because he came back from war alive. Once he comes back from war alive, then the get is annulled. He's still married to her. Right? Because he did not die.
It's not annulled. It was never...
Right. It never became legal. Right.
Because
never became legal. Never took any effect.
He didn't die. It would be only legal if he died.
Yeah, the get never took any effect because he did not die. He came back alive. So that was plan A. However, when Uriah came back from war, and David Melech told him to go home, he alluded to the fact that he should be intimate with his wife. And what does Uriah say? He refuses. So once he refused, then David Melech turns to plan B. Because he can't make Uriah go and be intimate with his wife. It's not working. Plan A is not working. So he turns to plan B. Plan B is to kill Uriah for being a rebel against the king, which he was. He was a rebel against the king. He refused to listen to David HaMelech. David HaMelech gave him a clear order, and he refused it.
But why, according to the story, why we would think Baba Sheva had relations with David? Maybe she had relations with somebody else. I mean, why?
He was concerned that the story would come out. You know, everyone knows that she was pregnant and she was not with her husband. Who is she pregnant from?
Somebody. Anybody.
Anybody, you're right. But even.
Anybody. You know.
The king, when a king goes.
Don't get
he
when
has,
a king goes.
He
We're
has,
not talking about kings from other
Rabbi
country.
Miller with him, and he has. He has an entourage going with him. He doesn't just go sneaking out. There's no way a king sneaks out. He has bodyguards with him 28 hours a day.
Yeah.
Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, it's very hard to cover up
such
a story.
What does that have to do with this, with his bodyguards?
Well, it's very hard to cover up.
This woman becomes pregnant. Okay, people who know her Hey, your husband out here, you became pregnant. That's bad. Why should they think it was from David? Could be from anybody. Well, what happened there that they would think it was from David?
Again, it's very hard to cover up such a story. We see even after he ended up marrying her, and Uriah was killed, the story still leaked out.
Why?
How was it leaked out?
There must have been something there that
maybe Bathsheba told someone. I don't know exactly. It's not clear how the story came out.
His bodyguards knew.
But it definitely came out somehow.
That he was alone with her. That's all.
Well, you brought up the subject of the National Enquirer, which is like, you know, the celebrities have the same problem. They can't go anywhere without somebody hiding in a corner. You know, spying on them, taking a picture.
Yeah, with the paparazzi.
And what Richie's saying is that he left, he had lots of people around him. People know where the king lives, they know which direction he's going to, they know which house he's...
Did Ahasuerus have guards out there?
Yeah.
Mordechai knew, and...
Exactly. I mean...
It
gets around.
It's hard to cover up the...
Yeah, it's very hard to cover up.
Anyway...
Very hard to cover up.
Let's go further.
The last pasuk is, like, say... David said, took her home to his house, and she became his wife, and bore him a son. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord.
Most famous story.
Yeah. So again, let's just finish off with the two last issues that Damari has with David and Melech. So again, the third issue was that he killed Uriah for no reason, but again, the Malbim addresses that, explaining that he killed him because he was a rebel against the king. The fourth issue that Damari has is... that he through placing Uriah and having him killed at war, he ended up killing other soldiers as well, which again was not the case. The Malbim specifies that Uriah was placed in the front line where soldiers would have been anyway. It's not like he put any other soldiers in danger because he wanted to kill Uriah. He planned it in a way where Uriah would be killed. He was hoping that Uriah would be killed throughout the war, and because he happened to be in a very dangerous place. the fifth issue was, and which we're going to address, is that he ended up marrying Bathsheba right away. I mean, right after Uriah was killed, he ended up marrying Bathsheba. As if he was, you know, still driven by the taiva, by the lust, by the desire that he had for her, which looked really bad. According to the Mari, only after he repented and he did tshuva, only then he realized what he had done wrong. But before that, he was still in the midst of his taiva. So with that, we're going to address today. So we got up to Pasuk Tezayin. In Pasuk Tezayin, David is now just sent a message to Yoav with Uriah, telling him to place Uriah on the front lines. And now Uriah gets to the battlefield and he gives over the message to Uriah, unbeknownst to him that it's really his it's his death sentence. So Pasuk Tezayin says, "Ve'yishmar Yoav es el ha'ir." When Yoav came closer to the city, "Ve'itan es Uriah el ha'makom asher Yoav ki'at shechay al sham." He placed Uriah strategically in that specific position where he knew that the warriors from within the city would come out and attack. Meaning there are specific places where warriors would come out from the city and attack the Jewish soldiers. So he placed Uriah specifically in that area. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. the people of the city, the warriors, came out from within the city. They started fighting this small group of Jewish soldiers. Some of them ended up dying, including Uriah as well. Veishlach Yoav now sent a message to David, telling him, he told him the whole, everything that was carried out at war. He gave the messenger specific orders. He tells him like this, once you tell him, you spell out to him exactly what happened at war, this whole attack on our soldiers, some of them died. Now, let's see what happens. V'hoyo, if, if the king asks you, What was the reason that you came closer to the city in order to fight? Don't you know that there is a buffer zone around the city that soldiers are not supposed to pass? Meaning, there is a distance where the archers can reach. That's the distance of 1 mil. They can reach a distance of 1 mil. And that is the buffer zone where the Jewish soldiers do not pass that line because they don't want to get killed. So if David asks you, why did you pass that line? Why did you go closer to the wall, putting yourself in danger? Another issue the king might have is the fact that you got so close. Again, there's two lines of defense. The first line is 1 mil. That's where the archers can reach. Then once you get even closer to the wall, once you get even closer to the chayma, then anyone standing on the wall can easily throw rocks on the soldiers and kill them. Rocks and arrows, whatever it is. So that's the second line of defense. Even a woman, right, you don't have to have any special skills. You don't have to be an archer in order to throw rocks from a very tall wall onto the soldiers below. Right? Anyone can go ahead and kill the soldiers that way. That's the second line of defense, and if David asks you, the messenger, why did you go so close that you can easily have been killed by anyone on top of the wall, just like Avimelech ended up being killed by a woman, then this is the punchline where you tell David, and once you tell him this, he's going to be satisfied. Tell him that Uriah Achiti died as well. Now, wasn't Yoav worried that the messenger will suspect, you know, well, why would a king be so happy? Why would he be satisfied once I tell him that Uriah was killed? What's going on over here? So the Malbim explains that this line has a double meaning. Yoav was telling this to the messenger. The messenger figured the reason why the death of Uriah would satisfy the king was because if he tells the king that Uriah died, then the reason for that is that since Uriah was one of the one of the 37 Giborim that David HaMelech had, one of the 37 warriors that David HaMelech had, and he in many ways led the men. Meaning there was the general who was Yoav, and then there was these warriors amongst the other soldiers who would lead their men. And if Uriah himself went to war, then you should know David HaMelech, that the rest of the people followed Uriah. And once you tell him that Uriah was killed, then David HaMelech would be satisfied because he knows that if Uriah went at it with it, then clearly there was nothing wrong with that strategic maneuver. That's what the messenger figured. That's why that line would satisfy David HaMelech. But Yoav knew that the real reason why it would satisfy David HaMelech was because David wants Uriah dead.
Yeah, so it sounds like here, like he's saying, you know, he'll forget all about the mistakes that we did once he finds out that
right.
The one thing he really wanted is accomplished.
Right, right. But again, the messenger did not pick up on that.
Right.
The messenger thought, he figured that, once David HaMelech hears that Uriah was killed, if he led this line of attack,
right,
then clearly there was nothing wrong with it.
Sure.
Vayelech HaMelech, the messenger goes over to David HaMelech, v'yegel lo David eskol asher shlocho Yoav. He goes there and he tells David everything Yoav told him. This is what he tells David. Once these soldiers attacked from the city, they started coming, attacking us in the battlefield outside of the city. Through the heat of battle, we ended up passing the first line of defense, putting ourselves in danger from the archers. Right, again, because we were so involved in the battle, we didn't realize, we kind of lost track of where that line of defense was, and we passed it. The archers started shooting arrows to your men from the wall. some of your men ended up dying. And also, Uriah ended up dying. Now, note that the messenger did not wait for David to ask, oh, why did you do that? For what purpose? That was dangerous. That was foolish. He didn't wait for him to say that. Right away, he volunteered the information that Uriah died as well. Because he knew that would calm down David HaMelech. So he did not exactly follow what Yoav told him to say. He didn't wait until David would ask. He volunteered the information right away. So what happens now? V'emar David el Malach. David now turns to the messenger and he says, go tell Yoav not to be distraught. Ki kazay v'chazay toichal acherev. Hachazek m'cham tucho al yir v'harsa v'chazkeyu. You have nothing to worry about. It's better that it happened this way. Because through engaging in battle with the soldiers from within the city, you're going to end the war earlier. And you're right. You're right. Some soldiers might die in the process. However, if you prolong the war by just sitting back and setting siege, waiting for them waiting for the war to end, by prolonging the war, you're going to end up killing more soldiers than if you go ahead and attack and end the war sooner. So you're right, some men did die, but in the larger picture, the war was shorter, which did save many lives. So I want you to keep fighting strongly against the city. V'harsa, I want you to ruin the city. Go ahead and attack, initiate, and then you will be victorious. So this is the conversation of David with the messenger. And the messenger goes back to Yoav and tells him, "V'tishma eishes Uriah kimeis Uriah isha, v'tispoid al bala." Once Bathsheba hears that her husband Uriah dies, she's in mourning, and she now carries out a eulogy for her husband. Now it's very interesting to note that the way the pasuk calls Uriah over here is Uriah isha. There's two ways to call a woman's husband. In Hebrew, there's Isha and there's Baila. Baila means her master. The one who's. That's why Baili means an owner of an object is called the Baili, right? Baila means her master, the man she looks up to. Isha, however, refers to their emotional relationship, their special connection that they had. So now, the people thought that she was mourning over what? Over their connection that they had. Because they thought that she was still married to him. However, the truth was that, so that's why the pasuk says Isha. However, the truth was that she was mourning her Baila. She was mourning her husband because he already divorced her. That's what the Malbim says.
Do we know who the messenger was?
No, doesn't say. Doesn't say. Vayabar Evel Vishlach David Vayasal Besai Vatilay Laisha Vatilay Ben. So once the mourning is ended, David sends for her and he gathers her into her house. Now Malcolm explains that the reason why he gathered her into his house was not, it seemed like to the people, it seemed like, you know, he was, you know, since Uriah was obviously very close to the king, he was one of his 37 warriors. He's a very high appointed official. So clearly he had a relationship with the family. So since Uriah died, David is trying to console the widow, taking her into her house, trying to comfort her. And one thing led to the next, and they ended up getting married. That's what the people viewed it as. That's at least how David hoped the people would view it. So he ended up marrying her, and she gave birth to a son. We're going to see later on that he dies as a baby. What David did was wrong in the eyes of Hashem. Why does it say that? Because Hashem was the only one who knew what happened. It was only wrong in the eyes of Hashem. It was not wrong in the eyes of the people. because the people were completely clueless. They did not know what actually took place, and at this point, at least, they did not view David in any negative way. So, again, David clearly did not pass the Nisayon. Hashem told him, I'm going to challenge you, I'm going to give you a Nisayon. Mm-hmm. David clearly did not pass it. However, on the other hand, it's clear that David was not chayte. He did not sin in any way.
Mm-hmm. It's like he stayed within.
He kind of stayed within the lines of
legality.
But
so what?
Again,
what displeased Hashem if he didn't sin? What was it?
Right.
What was the displeaser?
So you're right. Technically, he did nothing wrong. However, because this is David, and David is obviously held to a much higher
Madrega.
Right.
See, even though he's not going to be punished in any basin, and if they would drag him to a basin and say, oh, David, you did this, he would not be punished. However, in the eyes of Hashem, he was accountable. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's a very confusing situation because on one hand, he did not pass on Nisayon. Technically, he did not do anything wrong, but it was not completely 100% righteous.
It wasn't glad kosher.
It wasn't glad kosher,
but it's glad.
Yeah, triangle, okay.
There's things you can do legally that you can find loopholes for.
It's hard to understand. Exactly, it's a very difficult.
You do something negative against you because you're supposed to be a religious person. Chilul Hashem.
Right, Chilul Hashem. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to see later on
how I was going to do it.
I just wanted to end off with one point, is that, why does it have to happen this way? Right? I'm saying it's very confusing. This is David HaMelech, right? Why did he go through this whole story, right? It seems very confusing. Like, David HaMelech would do that? So, there are Mefarshim, the Nesiv HaShalom among them, explains that it's more connected to Kabbalah, Jewish mystical thought, is that since out of David would be coming the line of Mashiach is going to be coming out of David many, many generations later, we find throughout the Messianic line that we have all these questionable relationships. It starts off with Yehuda and Tamar.
Right.
Yehuda, right, as you mentioned before, Yehuda ended up being with his daughter-in-law at the time. Tamar, he thought she was a prostitute. He ended up being with his daughter-in-law. He was almost killed her, right? All these weird, questionable relationships that you would not expect.
But even going back further,
if you go back to Lot.
You know,
right,
Yehuda
right.
Comes from Moab.
Yeah, exactly.
Moab.
With Noach, right?
Noach,
who is intimate with his two daughters, who brought out Ammon and Moab, who led to Ruth, who ended
Lot.
Up.
Lot.
Right.
You said Noach.
Sorry, yeah, Noach. Lot, yeah.
Okay.
My mistake. Lot was intimate with both of his daughters after he thought that the whole world was destroyed. Right. He didn't know it was only Sodom.
It says they thought that.
I
don't know what he thought.
Yeah, yeah.
He liked the idea.
Yeah, he liked the idea. That's what it says the second time he was held accountable.
They were doing it for him because they thought there's nobody else but him.
Yeah.
He had a little too much to drink, you know.
All
the stuff that he did, anyway, he told them when the people surrounded his house, he says, take my daughters. Do what you want.
Right. It's a very, very interesting
one
character.
One thing, he's trying to save these guys, but to do that, he didn't care.
Yeah.
Right. In any case, so it starts with Lot through Yehuda, mm-hmm. Down to David HaMelech. So why does this happen? It's because, now this idea is brought down in a few places, is that Hashem, so to speak, has to hide the Messianic line in all these back alleys, questionable relationships, so that the Sitra Achra, the negative spiritual forces in this world, will not, so to speak, they will not take possession, they will not take control over the line of Mashiach. They would not have, because they would never think to look there. They would never dream that through these kind of relationships, Mashiach would come about. That's why Hashem has to orchestrate the events for these kind of relationships to happen in order for Mashiach to come forth and not be consumed by the Sitra Achra, these negative spiritual energies. So that just gives us a partial explanation to why it has to happen this way. Okay, we'll stop here and we'll continue next week. Sorry?
The Mensch Tracht, being things and God laughs.
Right.
He has a plan which we don't